Now, I think what I'm going to do is probably go through these examples on my screen, and then we should have a bit of time left for those of you who want to try this in your lab. But we'll see. We'll see how much our time permits us to do this. There was another question up front. Yes.
So what's the difference between plasm and flare?
So the difference between flare is that flare is designed to extract scripts and show them to you close to what the original source code would look like. Flasm is designed to extract scripts and show you not the source code, but the low-level assembly-like instructions. And Flasm doesn't do that very well, so I don't use it for that purpose. But Flasm has this wonderful -x parameter that I use to decompress the Swift files. Yeah, another question in the back.
What did you do to download that?
So how did I download the Swift file? Same way I would download an HTML file, just using wget. And yeah, I don't want to render it. I just want to retrieve it and save it locally.
Mm-hmm. You give it the name of the file when you use wget?
When you use wget, you would give it the same exact URL that the user would have clicked on, the full URL, and it would save this file locally. But I have this file locally for you within a zip file if you want to play with it later on. So something else, another tool that I wanted to mention to you, I thought I'd mention it to you because some people have heard of this. There's a plugin that somebody wrote for IDA Pro that allows IDA Pro to decompile, or rather to disassemble Swift files. Sounds great, doesn't it? If you install this plugin, when you load the Swift file into IDA Pro, it will give you an option to parse it as a Shockwave Flash file. Sounds great in principle. In practice, though, it doesn't work very well. Now, in this particular example, it'll work okay. So here is IDA Pro using this plugin. It disassembled the Swift file. But in reality, it does not very well work very well because it only supports ActionScript version 1 and 2. Many of the malicious scripts that I see now are written in a new version of the language called ActionScript 3. This does not support it. And also, if you want to use the plugin, you got to have the commercial version of IDA Pro, not the freeware. But at the same time, it's a good starting point. There is source code available to this. You can find it on the web. And if you're a developer, hey, maybe you want to improve the source code so that this plugin is actually useful for us. Let's look at some of the more complex examples. And to do that, I wanted to introduce you to the way Swift files are structured. How do they even work? Well, a Swift file has a header that tells Flash Player how it's supposed to load that Swift file to execute it. And the rest of the information within the Swift file is stored and organized according to various tags. Tags are like different commands. For example, if the Flash Player is supposed to show a frame, there's a tag that's called show frame. If the Flash Player is supposed to execute a script, there's a tag called do action. Do action allows a developer of the Swift file to embed a script created using the language ActionScript version 1 or version 2. They're very similar. They are reminiscent of JavaScript in their syntax. There's another language called ActionScript 3 that you can embed as well. That one is done using a tag called doABC. For those of you who are trivia buffs, ABC stands for ActionScript bytecode. Different tags. So to analyze a Flash program, you want a tool that knows how to properly parse these tags and extract and interpret these scripts. What's the deal with ActionScript 1, 2, and 3? Well, if you've been tracking Flash for a while, I don't know how many of you remember, when it first started out, it was very, very basic. All it could support were just some basic tags to control animation. And then it started getting more and more advanced. It started supporting keyboard and mouse events. Then they added scripting support. Then they created this language, ActionScript 1 and 2, that became more and more sophisticated. But developers loved this platform. They wanted to use it for even more advanced things. So Macromedia, now Adobe, decided to create a brand new language called ActionScript 3. And in its syntax, it's similar to Java. Very powerful. But it's so different from ActionScript 1 and 2 that they ended up creating a completely new virtual machine that is part of Flash Player. Right? Because This script does not run natively on x86 processors. Flash Player is like Sun Java Virtual Machine. It's just that it understands different languages. So what many people don't realize is that the current version of Flash Player actually includes two different virtual machines. Flash Player looks into the header to see which version of ActionScript the developer used and invokes the appropriate virtual machine. Sadly for us, most tools available to analyze Flash scripting only support ActionScript 1 and 2. Not as many tools support ActionScript 3. That's the limitation. But I did find a few that support ActionScript 3. And to give you a sense for what these scripts look like, here's an example. I think I got this one from Wikipedia. Here's a typical Hello World example. All it says is Hello World. To write this script in ActionScript 1 and 2, the syntax is pretty simple. You basically create a text and then you add a child that says, hey, print that text to the screen. This is what a developer would create using a program like Macromedia Flash MX. Then they would compile this to create a Swift file. And this is what a Swift file would look like. Just a collection of bytecodes that Flash Player knows how to interpret. But there's also the intermediate state that is similar to assembly, but it's not x86 assembly. This is another language called P-code. And this P-code looks similarly to the way assembly would look, but it's a different syntax. How would this look like in ActionScript 3? Very different, totally different. The original syntax is very different. Hello world. Before, after, different version of the language, and therefore a completely different set of P-code instructions. That's why you need different tools to understand what this says. Let's look at another example. Here's an example. This was documented, I don't know, maybe about a year ago. You may have read about it. People were complaining because they thought their clipboard was possessed. It was really strange. No matter what they pasted, no matter what they copied into their clipboard, whenever they pasted, it was always the same URL, pointing to a malicious website. What's going on? I can't copy anything into my clipboard, people were saying. Then after a while, they realized that this only occurs while their browser is displaying this ad. Now, the ad is advertising a legitimate website. It is written in Flash. Well, what's in the ad is what matters, right? It's what's on the inside that counts. So I got a screenshot of the ad, but I couldn't find the original Swift file. Fortunately, somebody created a proof of concept Swift file that implemented the same functionality, and I got a copy of it on Remnix. It's in the clipboard.poc zip file, and I extracted it. And how do I analyze it? Here is my favorite tool for analyzing Swift files. It is called Swift Dump. It's also installed on Remnix. SwiftDump knows how to interpret all the Flash tags. And it also knows how to disassemble scripts. And the good news is that it supports all versions of ActionScript. To extract scripts from the Swift file, you gotta call SwiftDump using the following parameters. Capital D, lowercase d, u. What does that do? I don't remember exactly. It basically says, extract everything that you can out of this file. Let me show you what that would look like in the lab. So, this example is an unzip clipboard. And I'm calling SwiftDump dash capital D, lowercase d, u, and then the unzipped Swift file, clipboard.poc.swift. Now, this is going to send its output to the screen, so I'm going to redirect it into a file. I'm going to call it clipboard.poc.txt. So now it has extracted all the information that it could out of the Swift file, and I'm going to use Notepad to look at it. Now, this is what it has extracted. You can spend some time looking at the various tags. And also, you can spend some time looking at the scripts embedded into these tags. And here is the script that I want to bring to your attention. It is in your books on page 155. Now, this is P-code. similar to assembly, but a different set of instructions. If you want to read the full document, Adobe has a pretty comprehensive manual of all, and all the instructions that this supports. But you don't need to be a P-code expert to understand what goes on here. This is a script that's embedded into one of the frames, and it keeps looping all the time. This is executing every second or so. It keeps running this code over and over again. What does it run? Well, look at this. There's a call to some kind of a function that's called setClipboard. Before it calls this function, it pushes a string to the stack, and the string is evil.com, a URL. This is why the clipboards were possessed. When the victim went to the malicious website that showed that ad, the ad had a frame in it that kept executing the script over and over again. So no matter what the victim copied into their clipboard, as soon as this script executed, the clipboard was overwritten with this malicious URL. And I guess the attacker's expectation was that people like to share URLs and they don't necessarily look at what they paste. And he was hoping that that's how he's going to spread links to his website. Very strange and tricky. Now, you might wonder, why in the world would Flash be allowed to override my clipboard? Good question. Nobody knows the answer, but shortly after this attack, Adobe disabled this functionality in Flash. But it shows you that the attackers are really pushing Flash functionality to its limits. And it wasn't difficult to analyze this because of SwiftDump. Another set of tools that you might want to bring into your lab. These are one of the few commercial tools that I thought I'd mention to you, are commercial decompilers for Flash. And I mention these tools because they're really good. Flare, the decompiler that I mentioned earlier, it's free, but it does not support ActionScript 3. SwiftDump is really good. It supports all languages of ActionScript, but it only shows you P code, not the original source code. These are commercial decompilers that show you the original source code of the scripts. And they compete head on. One is called SoThink Swift Decompiler. The other one is called Flash Decompiler Trilix. Very similar functionality. They're similarly priced. I think they're about $60 or $70 each. Not too bad. And here's how they would show you. Instead of looking at the P code, you get to see what the original source code looked like. It's a little bit easier to understand. Let's look at another example. You may be starting to see a pattern. A lot of these scripts are delivered through advertisements. So there were people who visited a relatively frequent forum called Taringa.net, and they reported when they saw this ad that they were getting sometimes redirected to a malicious website. So let's say you have to respond to this incident. You find out what ad was used to redirect them. You download it. It's a Swift file. You bring it into your lab. How do you analyze it? Well, I looked at it in a browser first. I loaded it into my browser. I wanted to see, well, what does it do to my system? Can I see it redirecting me somewhere? A little bit of behavioral analysis does not hurt. Couldn't see anything suspicious. I clicked on it, and whenever I clicked on it, I would actually go to a legitimate website, cars.com. What's malicious about that? All right. Well, then I said, let me extract the scripts that are embedded into it using Flare. I got this zip file, 11713.zip. In it, there are a bunch of Swift files, and the one that represents the ad is 17113. So I extracted scripts from it using Flare. And if you look at the scripts that it found, here is what scripts were embedded into that file. It's in your books on page 160. Anybody knows what this script does? I can't tell you, because look at it, it makes no sense. It's a bunch of nested for loops that don't do anything. This is really weird. And this is what an obfuscated action script looks like. So somebody went through some trouble to obfuscate their script, so we cannot easily figure out what's going on here. No URLs visible, nothing. Well, all right. Then I tried using the commercial decompiler. It showed me a little bit more information when I brought it into the P code view. And this actually explains why Flare was not showing anything. I still cannot quite tell exactly what's going on here, except that it looks like the script is assembling itself on the fly. It's got a bunch of bytecodes that it is bringing together, and it's executing them using the eval command. And the thing about this is that's a little bit weird is that you can see they're declaring a variable here. They're assigning a value of 5 to this variable. What is the variable called? The name of the variable is the hexadecimal 01. There is no ASCII counterpart to this. There is no way to print the name of this variable, and that's why Flair couldn't show us anything. All of these variables have non-ASCII names, and therefore, they don't show at all when you look at the output. Very sneaky. And again, I don't know what's going on here, but this I can see that the script is assembling itself on the fly, just like JavaScript would. Now, if we saw something like this in JavaScript, we have a tool like Firebug that would allow us to set a breakpoint, and we could observe the script deobfuscating itself. Unfortunately, I have not seen a tool like this that supports low-level debugging of ActionScript. We don't have such a tool, not that I have seen. So I don't know how to deobfuscate this. How about SwiftDump? Well, SwiftDump was able to extract a bit of more information out of the file, and in one of those tags, there was a reference to a URL, couldithin.com. I thought, aha, got you. I went to that URL. It does not look malicious. Looks like some kind of a dieting website. Not malicious as far as I could tell. All right, what's next? Well, I brought it into the commercial tool that Macromedia has called Macromedia Flash MX. If you go to that tool, debug list variables, it'll show you some, not all, but some of the variables embedded into the script, and one of those variables looked suspicious. Here's the URL to getfreecar.com. And maybe I just became a pessimist after doing this for a while, but now every time I see a URL that has the word free in it, I think that probably it's up to no good. So, this looks pretty promising. You can do a whois lookup and you would find that this URL, that domain name is registered in Ukraine. All right. Nothing wrong with registering something in Ukraine. I was born in the Ukraine, but nowadays it's a little bit suspicious. All right. WAT. WAT stands for the Web of Trust. It's a public website that allows you to look up reputational information about websites. And if you look up this URL in WAT, it would show you that it has a history of malicious behavior. So this is probably the site that we're looking for. All right, good. So now we have this URL. Let's go there. What's there? If you retrieve it using wget, you will find out that it's actually another Swift file. So here is one Swift file that redirects the user into another Swift file. This one I could recompile using Flare, and here is its script. You can spend some time reading the logic of the script, and it's documented in your book. What this script does is it uses Flash cookies. Flash has its own mechanism that's cookie-like, to basically look up to see whether the user came to this website before. If they came here before, they're not going to try to infect them. But if they have not been here before, then they're going to redirect them to another URL on the same website that ends with statsg.php. Okay, let's go to statsg.php. What's there? An HTML file that loads more Swift files. Oh my goodness. So, all right, let's go to one of those files, and one of those files will redirect you to this URL that if you decode it is a URL on Blessed Ads. If you go to Blessed Ads, it will redirect you to antispywaremaster.com. And what's there? This is what's there. All of this is to get you to install a fake antivirus tool. Now, those have been spreading around lately. It's crazy. There was one Swift file pointing to another Swift file pointing to another Swift file pointing to another URL that redirected you to this one. And all of these levels of redirection are presumably there to confuse your anti-malware tool, to make it difficult for your tool to determine where the victim is being directed. This is one of those attacks that tries to social engineer the victim. It presents to you an image that looks like it's your screen. And the image says that you're vulnerable, you're going to allow scripting, you're infected. But don't worry, we have a solution for you. All you got to do is you got to install Anti-Spyware Master, and it's going to make all of your problems go away. And of course, if you install it, it's going to scan your system, and it's going to tell you, wow, you're really infected. But don't worry, I have a cleanup solution for you. It's only going to cost you $40. So it's a way of extorting money from you, basically. all of this through various levels of redirection to eventually get you to install this tool. There was another question in the back first. Yes. How about starting the HTTP proxy and capturing all of these redirects? A very good idea. I'm going to actually show you a similar example where I did just that. Now, sometimes it's hard to get it to execute the redirects because you can have a fair bit of logic within the Swift file that you cannot read. And maybe it's only going to redirect you on a Wednesday, and today's a Tuesday, let's say. So sometimes you're going to need to keep it running in your lab for a while to actually get it to do anything interesting. Or you may need to click on it for a while. But that kind of technique will help you, yes. Yes. So why not all users were seeing this activity? Well, that's where I said it's unclear what logic might be embedded within the Swift file. It might decide to redirect every other user so as not to attract too much attention to itself. Maybe it targets users located only in a particular country. Maybe it targets users using a very particular web browser. The original Swift file, I could not deobfuscate it, so I don't quite know what logic is embedded into it. Now, as a developer of Flash programs, there are several things you can do to protect your file from being analyzed. So attackers use several techniques. One of the techniques is to use a commercial obfuscator, a popular one that I have seen called Swift Encrypt, very inexpensive, like $40. Swift Encrypt will look at your Swift file, and wherever you have normal action script, it'll translate it into something that looks like this, using mathematical operations to dynamically create the action script when it runs within the browser. I don't know how to reverse this. But it pays to have Swift Encrypt in your toolkit because it is very good at recognizing those Swift files that it protects. So I had it running in my lab, and I pointed it to a directory with a bunch of Swift files in it, and it placed a lock icon next to those that are its own. So I know that it looks like Swift Encrypt was used to protect these particular Swift files. Another way in which malicious Swift files are protected is using a framework that's supposed to make it easy for people to create animations. The one that I have seen used is called the FuseKit. FuseKit is not malicious. It's a popular open source project that's supposed to make it easy to create animations in Flash. To do that, it supports some pretty advanced mathematical calculations. And those are the calculations that malware authors use to obfuscate their code. Here's an example. This is an ad that appeared on Newsweek. Kind of a big deal, a popular website. This is what that ad looked like. It was advertising or pretending to advertise a legitimate service called EasyForex. But people were saying that they would get redirected to malicious websites sometimes. So you grab a copy of the ad, and I have it in your laboratory. I have it on Remnux. And if you look at it using Flare, you will be able to extract the scripts. But good luck figuring out what the scripts do. There is a reference to a URL. But this is not a malicious website. This is a misdirection. The script itself looks like it should be readable, but there's a whole lot of references to something like Moses supposes. This is what the FuseKit looks like. They're using FuseKit libraries to implement a lot of mathematical functions that presumably assemble the malicious script on the fly when it runs. I don't know how to deobfuscate this. It's a one-way street as far as I know. Now, this particular example, I tried to load it into Macromedia Flash MX, and I met another defense that I thought I'd tell you about. Macromedia said, cannot open a protected movie. This is a protection that's very weak. This is what's built into Macromedia Flash MX. As a developer, you can check a box that says, protect this movie. Don't allow anybody to look at it using Macromedia Flash MX. Easy to bypass. If you're willing to pay something like $30, you can buy a tool called FlashKeeper. You just right-click on the Swift file and say unprotect, and you're done. If you are too cheap to spend $30 to $40, here's how you do this manually. What you gotta do is you gotta look at the file's tags using SwiftDump, and you will see that one of those tags is a tag called protect. All you need to do is use a hex editor to remove that tag from the Swift file, and then it's going to be unprotected. Now, this is not protection like Swift Encrypt or the Fuse Kit. This is protection that's meant to make it hard for you to load the Swift file into the commercial tool Macromedia Flash MX. But unfortunately, once I loaded the Swift file into that tool, it didn't help me. I didn't see any additional information. So I'm stuck. And that's when I used a HTTP proxy. I said, you know what? I cannot do code analysis. Let me do some behavioral analysis. So I opened the browser in my lab. I loaded the Swift file. As long as you install a Flash player, you'll be able to run these Swift files in the browser. And it showed me my ad. And I configured my browser to go through my proxy, and I just waited. And after a few minutes, I could see this request going on behind the scenes. I did not click on anything, but look at this. My ad behind the scenes is seen going to adoptserver.info. I could see this if I had a network sniffer running, or a tool like Paris Proxy would show it to me as well. Great! I got this URL. Where is it hidden within the Swift file? I have no idea. But I can go to that URL. And guess what's there? CWS is a tag that suggests to you that this is another Swift file. Swift file calling another Swift file. Okay, let's download that Swift file. It is obfuscated. This is what Swift Encrypt looks like. So this chase continues. And this is one of those areas in malware analysis where really I don't have a lot of pointers to give you if you get stuck like this, except to say rely on behavioral analysis. You know, observe with a network sniffer, maybe you can figure out things that way. There are some people working on better flash analysis tools. Maybe you are among those people. So I think in a year or so, we're going to have more sophisticated tools. But right now, it's still a big problem. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better because attackers realize that we have a hard time reverse engineering the Swift files, so they're probably going to use more and more of them. Well, I mean, Apple thinks that Flash is dead, so maybe that's going to be a good thing for us. But I think Adobe is going to put up a good fight. I don't think Flash is going away anytime soon. Yeah. So, that's Flash analysis. I have all of these examples in your lab, but I'm going to leave it up to you to go through them. We might have some time after class today, or maybe you want to play with it tomorrow during breaks. And if you have any questions, let me know. But using these tools is not very hard. The problem is that in many cases, the tools aren't all that sophisticated to give us exactly what I want. Mm, yeah. The last topic that I wanted to cover for today is a set of tools that can automate a lot of the tasks involved in analyzing malicious websites. What are these tools? Well, maybe you've heard about some of them already. Maybe some of these are going to be new to you. One set of tools that I find useful gives me historical reputational data about websites. The most popular tool in this space is probably McAfee Site Advisor. They were the first ones on the block. They got a lot of crawlers. They crawl websites. They try to see if these websites are malicious. And they have a large database of sites. And you go there, you look up a URL, they'll tell you if they think this site is bad or good. Symantec was a bit late to the game, but they also have a similar product called Norton SafeWeb. You can also use it to look up historical information about a site. And I also mentioned Web of Trust, mywhat.com. Similar information, but Web of Trust is actually based on community input. So people kind of act as reviewers and write their reviews of websites to specify whether they're bad or good. Yes?
Google offers the same browsing add-ons as well.
So Google has a safe browsing add-on for Firefox?
It does have one for Firefox.
Yeah, so it sounds like Google has an add-on that might also warn you if a particular website is malicious or not, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I like these tools because you can paste a URL and perform a lookup without going to that website. But yeah, I do know that Google maintains a pretty good database and it sounds like there are several ways of querying that database as well. Yeah. So another set of tools that I like are on the slide. And here's the thing. The tools that I mentioned previously, they give you historical information. But the websites that you're analyzing, in many cases, they are legitimate websites that were compromised. So if you look them up in these sites, they'll say, no problem, these sites are good. That's because it was compromised yesterday. So I've got a set of tools that will visit that website right now in real time, and they will try to evaluate whether that site is malicious or not. These are AVG Link Scanner, FinGen has a tool like this, and Dazient as well. Paste a URL, they're going to visit that site, and they're going to tell you if they think it's malicious. And in some cases, they might even identify the specific exploit that the site might be using to target its visitors. Good.
It won't do it.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
What I'm saying,
These sites will actually visit the malicious site right then and there. Yeah, in real time, yeah. And they're going to look it up and they'll tell you if they think it's malicious or not. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I think also Qualys just began offering a similar service that's also free, that's competing with Dazient as well. So several tools that can visit the site on your behalf, see if they're malicious or not. Also, there are several tools that will try to do automated JavaScript deobfuscation for you, which is really great. One site that's not very well known, that is actually quite good at doing this, is jsunpack.geek.uk.org. All you gotta do is you paste your obfuscated JavaScript into it, or you give it a URL, click the fetch button, and it's gonna decode it. And it can handle multiple layers of obfuscation. Isn't that great? Don't have to do any of those manual steps, it'll automate all of this for you. Pretty cool, I think. This is an example that we covered yesterday. This was a dual layer obfuscation, it deobfuscated it with a click of a button. Another tool that allows you to do something similar that's a bit better known is WebOWET. WebOWET.iseclab.org. And this one can deobfuscate some SWIFT files and some PDF files as well. So you can point them to a local HTML file that has your malicious payload in it, or you can point them to a URL. You specify whether you want to decode JavaScript or Flash, and it'll try to do it for you. It's a pretty sophisticated tool that also is able to look for known exploits and deobfuscate multiple layers of obfuscation of JavaScript. How good is it at dealing with Flash? That's still a work in progress, but it's getting better. Here's an example where I uploaded a SWIFT file to it, for example, and it was able to identify that it's pointing me to a particular URL. And that's as much as I want to say about analyzing malicious browser-based code today. We're actually going to revisit this topic on the last day of the class. I've got more tools to show you, more advanced examples to show you, but we're going to do that a bit later. Right now, we've got a few minutes left. Those of you who are tired, want to go home, want to hang out, you're welcome to leave if you'd like. Those of you who have a bit of stamina left, I would encourage you to try out those Flash exercises. I'm going to be around to help you out with those. Those are really the hands-on exercises. Go through the examples that I covered. Ask me if you have any questions. I'm going to be around. But those of you who want to leave, I will then see you tomorrow morning. Thanks a lot. And ask me if anything was not clear. I'm going to be around. What books do we need tomorrow? Tomorrow, you only need to bring book number 3. You don't need to bring this book anymore. Also, since you asked about tomorrow, tomorrow is going to be a little bit hard for those of you who are new to assembly. Those of you who have seen assembly before, it'll be probably easy. But if you have not seen assembly before, or if it's been a while since you saw assembly, I recommend looking through the beginning of that book, familiarizing yourself through some of those concepts.